Welcome! We are live at the well. I'm your host, Tulumubona Namalemo, and I'm here to equip and empower you with mindsets and habits for lifelong lifestyle wellness. I'm a champion for mind, body, and spirit health, and I believe wellness should be pursued first as an act of worship to God. We always start off these episodes with wellness wisdom, and today's wellness wisdom is don't be afraid to try something new, especially if things you have been doing are not working for you, or if you're bored, or if you just wake up in the mood for something different and something new. You have the freedom to decide at any given point in time to stop doing something that is not moving you along in your wellness journey and to start doing something that will. So today we are talking about acquired tastes, but let me set the scene and give some backstory. I've shared on my Instagram page a bit of my journey of improving my thyroid's function that I began at the beginning of last year. So I got some blood work done at the beginning of last year that was eye-opening, and of course my doctor immediately jumped to prescribing medication. But I don't take medication unless I direly need medical intervention. And I also like to understand the root cause of symptoms before I even consider medication. So, of course, the first place I went to was nutrition. I started researching what foods in lack or excess can either improve or worsen my thyroid's function. By the way, quick diversion to talk about the thyroid, and disclaimer, I am no expert on this. I'm only an expert on my body. I'm also just learning as I go. But a few things I've learned about the thyroid that I think are worth mentioning. Number one, you may be wondering, okay, what is the thyroid? What does it do? So the thyroid is an endocrine gland that makes and releases certain hormones. So it controls your metabolism, which if you don't know what metabolism is, that is how your body uses energy. A lot of people say it as in it's how fast you burn calories. One of the symptoms I noticed when my thyroid really started acting up was rapid weight gain, which was out of the ordinary for my normal weight fluctuation. So it's a small but mighty organ and impacts a lot for us, especially for women, but also for men. The other thing is that 12% of the U.S. population will experience a thyroid condition at some point in their lives, and this is according to the American Thyroid Association. 1 in 8 women will develop a thyroid disorder during their lifetime. Women are 5 to 8 times more likely than men to have thyroid problems, and yet as many as 60% of people don't know they have it. The last thing I'll mention, regarding, you know, thyroid facts, is there are a number of causes for thyroid issues, and there are also a number of varying symptoms. A couple of others that I personally experienced in addition to the rapid weight gain were feeling lethargic and then a sudden change in the length of my cycle. And when that part happened, I was like, all right, I am not crazy. Something is off here. And that is what triggered me. That was the last straw that triggered me to go and get blood work done. And I confirmed that indeed my numbers were just very, very wild. And so as I was considering the foods that I can add or cut back on to improve my thyroid's function, one of the things I decided to do was to cut back on added sugars. Now, I'm not too much of a sweets person as far as cake or cookies or pastries or any of those things. I do love my ice cream though. Shout out to Jenny's ice cream and Mitchell's ice cream, my loves. And you know, occasionally I like candy, but it's never something that I eat regularly, so I never paid much attention to those added sugars before this point. And then I was like, hold on a minute. If I'm going to have to cut back on added sugars, that means I'm going to have to cut back on the sugar and eventually eliminate sugar in my daily cup of tea. And I'm thinking, how am I going to do that? Because I've been drinking tea for a very long time. Are you East African if you don't drink chai? Like, I drink tea every morning and some evenings. And so I'm thinking, this is not possible. Like, how am I going to be able to eliminate sugar or even cut back on my sugar? And I don't drink crazy amounts of sugar, but I know, especially when I was younger, I did. And I used to joke that I would drink tea with my sugar. So I was thinking to myself, I'm not going to be able to stop drinking tea because that's just something I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It's in my blood. But sugarless tea, it's not possible. I don't think I can manage it. Well, I'm here to report that several months later, I now drink sugarless tea. I'm actually drinking some sugarless lemon ginger tea as I record this podcast this morning. And my sugar bowl has gone or will go untouched for weeks at a time sometimes because I just don't put sugar in my tea anymore. I started by cutting back. Like I put, I think I said maybe a tablespoon or something, and then I cut back and I put, I actually had to put a measuring spoon in there just to be, you know, conscious and aware, you know? So I cut back to, I think, a fourth of a teaspoon or something. I don't remember. And then I was just like, you know what? Just throw the whole bowl away. Forget about it. So I acquired, in a sense, I acquired the taste of sugarless tea because it had a long-term benefit for me. And I was perceiving that long-term benefit, especially comparing to having seen my crazy blood work. And about 6 months, I don't remember if it was 6 months or a year after the initial blood work I got done, and after the changes I'd made, including cutting back on added sugars, I went in and got, blood work done again, and my numbers were moving back in the right direction. So that even just reinforced this habit and these changes. So let's talk about acquired taste. And let's use vegetables as an example, because I've heard from a lot of adults that they don't like vegetables, they're not a vegetable person, they don't eat anything green, they don't do vegetables, and yet those same adults either drink coffee and or alcohol. Now, personally, I don't like the taste of either of those things, and I do not consume either of those things, save for the occasional, very occasional coffee I'll drink to stay alert on a long drive. And I'm going to take a wild guess and say that when you first tasted coffee and when you first tasted alcohol in its natural form, that you did not immediately love the taste. And if you did, you are a special kind of breed. But you overcame the dislike of those beverages, right? Or you forced yourself to acquire the taste. Because when I'll talk to some people, because, you know, these days, if you don't drink alcohol, people want to interrogate you and ask you why you're not drinking alcohol. And I'm like, all right, I'll tell you why. And one of the reasons for me is I don't like the taste of alcohol. And people will be like, well, it's an acquired taste. And I'm like, why should I force myself to acquire the taste of alcohol? Because to me, I just don't see the benefits of it, right? That's my personal opinion and, you know, conviction or whatever. But I do see the benefit of acquiring the taste of vegetables. And so I do that, or I have done that. But anyways, I'm digressing. A lot of, you know, when we talk about why it is that people will easily acquire the taste of, not easily, but they'll make the efforts to acquire the taste of something like coffee or something like alcohol, but will continue to say that they're not a vegetable person because they had a vegetable one time when they were 5 years old and they didn't like it. Some of it is because of social context and peer pressure, kind of like what I was just talking about, how specifically as someone who doesn't consume alcohol now, I noticed that, especially as a young adult, people question your whole life if you do not consume alcohol. But if you don't eat vegetables, no one's going to put you on the stand and interrogate you as to why you don't eat green things, right? Or maybe it's because of the psychological effects that you want out of consuming those drinks, right? Maybe you kept drinking them time and time again because, I don't know, coffee helps you be more alert and then you became addicted to the caffeine, or alcohol, you know, relaxed you, or whatever the case may be. you consumed them to the point that you liked them or at least tolerated them because you perceived the benefits that they provided for you. So why don't we keep the same energy when it comes to certain foods? And I think part of it is we don't realize how beneficial and impactful certain foods are to our diet. Food isn't just for the taste to the tongue. And I would argue that food is primarily for nourishment. Does that mean your food shouldn't taste good? Of course not. This isn't jail, you know? It doesn't mean we have to endure eating nasty things all the time. I mean, I used to despise so many vegetables. I never used to like Brussels sprouts. I never used to like green beans. I never used to like spinach, kale, asparagus. I also never used to like oatmeal and rice porridge, right? But all those things I eat now and I enjoy them. I know specifically with asparagus, I remember one summer going to my cousin's house and her dad, my uncle, forced us all to eat a few, what's the plural of asparagus? Is it asparagi? Asparaguses? Hey Siri. Uh-huh. What is the plural form of asparagus?
The answer I found is asparagus.
Okay, I guess it's asparagus. So my uncle forced us to eat a few asparagus. It sounds wrong. Feels wrong. Anyways, and I remember putting it in my mouth and holding my nose so I wouldn't taste it and then drinking something to hurry and wash the taste away, you know? And now I like asparagus. I figured out a way to cook it in a way that I enjoy it. I saute it with some salt, pepper, and some lemon pepper. And you want to know the benefits of asparagus? Asparagus has vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin K, vitamin B6 folate. That sounds like a song. I should make a song about asparagus. B6, folate, iron, potassium, copper, calcium, protein, and antioxidants. We love our antioxidants. And a few other benefits is that it promotes reproductive health. It's great for gut health, digestive health, and supports pregnancy since it's rich in folic acids. The benefits are endless, right? So acquire the taste of that. Why don't you? And so I will say, though, disclaimer, apparently it does make your urine smell funny. But hey, coffee and alcohol can do a number on your body too, but y'all should drink it. So have some grace for asparagus and smelly urine won't kill you, but a busted liver will. Anyways, moderation, right? On a little bit of a more serious note, for those who don't quote unquote do vegetables or don't like the taste of other foods, their aversion could be partly genetic. In that, for some people, the receptors on their tongue process the taste of certain things in one way versus another. But that's not the case for most people. I think that's a very small population, and probably for only certain things, not for all vegetables or all things green. I don't know. I don't know your life, you know. The other thing is past experiences. So, you know, maybe you didn't like how something was cooked one time, or you just had a negative experience with a certain vegetable or something that looked like something, and now you just have a psychological reaction to that thing. It could, like, you know, almost like trauma, you know, a trauma response. I don't know much about trauma responses, so let me not speak on things I don't know about. But anyway, it could also be cultural learning. Like a nurture type of situation. And I think about parents who were also very picky and their kids may have picked up on, no pun intended, but their kids may have picked up on that pickiness in that maybe they saw their parent picking out certain things of their food or not eating certain things. And they also just kind of, you know, were sort of nurtured to do the same. Or you just really haven't given it a good try, right? Definitely not as many tries as you've given some other foods and beverages. And so I want to leave you with 5 tips to help you acquire the taste of foods that you may not like. And some of these are from sciencealert.com. So shout out to them. The first is eating small portions of that food and to keep eating it. Kind of like how some parents will bargain with their kids and say, just have one. I remember when we were kids, my sister was a very picky eater. And my parents will say, okay, just have one. And so she quite literally picked out one bean out of the pan and ate one bean. And now she's a foodie. So, you know, all's well that ends well. You can also mix those foods and other things. So when I didn't like the taste of spinach, I would throw a couple of leaves in my smoothies to kind of mask the taste of it. So I could still get the benefits of spinach because spinach is high in iron and I needed iron. But I didn't like the taste of it. So I would just throw it in my smoothies and, mask the taste of it and still get the benefits of it. Speaking of benefits, also think of the benefits, right? We just talked about asparagus, and those weren't even all the benefits of asparagus, but think about the benefits of just a vegetable like asparagus, right? That alone can motivate you, especially if you're low in a lot of the vitamins that, you know, a certain food provides, or you need help with your... Not my stomach growling and embarrassing me on this podcast. I forgot what I was even saying. But yeah, just think of the benefits, the long-term benefits, the short-term benefits, and like, is it such a sacrifice to find some seasoning that, you know, you like cooking those vegetables in it and eating those vegetables because they are good for you? So, you know, in that light, self-control and discipline is definitely necessary to practice. And I'm going to do a podcast topic later on about how the aspect of discipline, there are things that we need to do and we have to do because they are good for us. And we're not going to love them in the beginning. But eventually when you see, number one, how it's maybe not that bad as you thought it was, or you see the benefits of it, you forget about, you know, the effort or the reason you did not want to start them in the first place. So that's another podcast for another day. The third thing is to eat the food in a positive context, or to eat it with other foods that you enjoy. I've kind of alluded to this, but a lot of these things are psychological. It's not necessarily that the food literally does not taste good to you, but for some reason you've developed a mental aversion to a certain food or a certain group of foods, right? Now, of course, this is not everybody. Like I said, I don't know your life, you know, but just something to consider. And then the other thing I would add is find creative ways to cook the food in a way that you enjoy. Use your favorite seasoning, saute it, put it in the oven, put it in the air fryer. Just find healthy ways to make these foods so that you're able to enjoy. Because like I said, we don't have to suffer, right? We don't have to endure every food that we're eating that we may not like. For me, a lot of the vegetables I never liked growing up, it's just the way they were made. They were, I think my mom used to steam them. And I don't remember what seasoning she put, but now I eat all these vegetables and I cook them how I like them. I usually saute them or put them in the air fryer, put some seasoning, a little bit of olive oil, and they are amazing. I'm also learning, you know, kind of like how I just mentioned, there's a lot of vegetables and other foods I never liked growing up. I remember I mentioned how I never liked oatmeal and rice porridge, and I think a lot of that was a texture thing for me because I remember eating... Right, my mom making me eat rice porridge, and it took me so long to eat it because I literally had a gag reflex from eating it. I remember sitting on the veranda, as we called it in Uganda where I grew up, and just forcing myself to eat it because, you know, mom said I had to eat it, and just taking almost an hour to eat it because I would gag every time. And like I said, I think that was a texture thing for me. And so now I don't eat rice porridge much anymore, but oatmeal, I cook it. I don't overcook it. I cook it just enough. Actually, I even eat, I do like overnight oats. I know some people, that is also a texture thing for them. Even to this day, like if I see an overripe avocado and I touch it, or like a very almost rotten banana, it's, I can't do it. But it comes down to the texture. So it's good to explore, all that to say, it's good to explore these different foods that we maybe thought we didn't like, but maybe it was just how the food was made, the context in which you ate the food, you know, that sort of thing. And then this just popped in my head, but I would also say not to think of certain foods as weight loss food. Like, this is the food to help me lose weight. This is the food to help me do this, this, and that. Think of it as nourishment. It's what your body needs. There's a lot of vitamins and minerals and nutrients that your body needs that God has provided us different foods. In his intelligent design, he's provided us many different foods to meet those needs. And so don't think about a food as, okay, well, when I go on a diet, then I'm going to eat these vegetables, because I'm associating vegetables with a diet. And a lot of times you don't enjoy your diet experience, because dieting is, anyways, let me not digress. But you may have that negative association with certain foods because you correlate them with a certain experience, maybe losing weight, and maybe you failed to lose weight in the past, or you just don't enjoy the diet, the yo-yo dieting, which, don't do yo-yo dieting. It's not helpful for you or your body. And yeah, that just popped into my head about not associating certain foods with, okay, when I need to be healthy, when it's 3 months before the summer season, I'm going to start eating these certain foods. No, food, all food, right, is meant to be nourishment for our body. So yeah, I'm going to leave that at that. So woman of God, man of God, ask the Lord to give you taste for what is good for you. Ask him to change your appetite. Ask him to renew your mindset towards food. We can't believe for what is seemingly impossible in every area of our lives, but in this area, especially if this is a big struggle for you. And I know for a lot of people, this is even to the level of addiction, like sugar addictions that prevent you from even having a taste for other things that are not sweet to the level that you are with your sugar addiction. So, you know, I know I've been kind of joking and lighthearted with some of my examples, but I know it is pretty, it's a serious issue for some people. And so invite God into it. If he is the Lord, which he is, and if he is your Lord, which I hope he is, that means he has power over every part of your body, including your tongue for taste, and including your mind for the psychological perspective or the mindsets that we have towards these foods. So invite God into this journey. And go eat some asparagus. Be well.